And welcome back, everybody. It's time for overtime on Off the Hook. Manuel here, Kyle there, and everyone's just getting back. We all take little breaks in the 5 minutes that we're given. I'm told that we are actually on the air. However, that's incorrect because we're not on the air. We're on the net. But whatever. Maybe somebody's broadcasting us. Someone could do this. I could broadcast the YouTube stream.
You mean from the stream, yeah.
Why not? Yeah.
You have our permission.
Yeah, except we don't have to abide by FCC rules now. Although we still do, but we might not. And then it would be up to you. We can take phone calls now, too. That's one of the reasons we can take phone calls. Our phone number 802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. And I don't know what you're pointing to, Kyle. You just pointed to something.
Well, I hadn't heard it. I just wanted to know if you could test it.
Test what?
Well, we don't have a call yet.
Okay.
But could you maybe turn it up so we can just see if it's there? Yeah.
Turn this? Oh, yeah. We have a dial tone. Which means nobody can call because we have a dial tone.
Well, now they can.
All right. Well, good.
Thanks for that.
802-321-4225. There is another story that broke this week that I'd like to spend a little bit of time on. And I wish we could spend more time on it or any time on it on the air. But there is a content subscription platform called OnlyFans. You might have heard about this in the news. They had about 120,000 creators registered with the site. And after the pandemic left millions of people out of work and sex workers unable to safely meet with clients in person, people flocked to the platform, which was already well known for its adult content. And by the end of 2020, OnlyFans boasted 1 million creators and 80 million users. Call that success. Creators liked the control the platform gave them over the kind of work they wanted to do, but the more the site grew, the more nervous they got. OnlyFans is not going to last, but it is a hell of a ride. OnlyFans creator Kimberly Kane told the New York Times in May. That's rather dire to it's kind of confusing here when you say OnlyFans creator. I assume that meant she created OnlyFans, but she didn't, did she? She's just a creator on OnlyFans.
It's how they describe
users of their
site. I don't like that. I don't like defining people in that way because it just makes them seem like gods, you know? Creators, I would never call myself a creator. I'm creative, but I don't know. It's just in this context. Okay, so she didn't start the site itself. It made it sound like she was saying that they were going to take it away from the people that made the site, that started the site. They'll take it away from us, just like they do everything else. It's only a matter of time. And she was right. Last Thursday, the site announced it would ban sexually explicit content beginning in October in order to comply with the requests of the platform's banking partners and payout providers as it seeks to attract outside investors. Isn't that always the way? And as it turns out, bankers and credit card companies are extremely conservative in their policies. They don't tolerate certain things that you might find is no problem for most of us. Basically, this was something that had bothered a lot of people. And was turning into a real issue. But I understand, has it been resolved? Has it been changed? Rob, do you know something about this?
Basically, they announced that they were going to ban what's known as sexually explicit content, I think in October. And there was a huge outcry. There were people who depend on the platform for a living. That was only exacerbated by the pandemic and lockdown and everything else. It's a form of work that people find, that some people find they can do from home, and that worked for a lot of folks. And so, you know, it was a good thing. But the platform has been advertised for people like performers of all types, people with cooking lessons and yoga lessons and things like that. That's what it looks like in the ads, in the ad campaigns. But on practical terms, it was driven by sex workers. It was driven by people producing pornographic content, just like every technological innovation in our history. Home video, the internet itself, commerce on the internet, site security. So much of this was spearheaded by people in the adult entertainment industries. And OnlyFans was ready to drop all of that, but there was an outcry, and apparently OnlyFans was able to resolve the issues with their bank that was the root of their policy change, and so they reversed the decision.
Well, maybe not going with the First Christian Bank of Alabama was a mistake. You know, maybe they should go with somebody a little bit more liberal.
Yeah.
Because, there are porn sites everywhere. I understand there's porn sites all over the place, and they take credit cards. So what is the issue?
There are virtual banks everywhere, and they take, well,
uh-huh, there's
money.
Cryptocurrency, that certainly doesn't care.
Yeah, but it turns out there is so much discourse that's coming of this, and a lot of it is really fascinating, even if you're not interested in the product itself. Because this the real issue behind all of this is that the banks find themselves under pressure from organized evangelical activists, conservatives, people like that, who basically are using this as a way to legislate what people can do with their bodies. And it's a roundabout way to come to it, but it is something that's happening in the world. And I think, based on what I'm seeing, it really seems like OnlyFans, maybe even if they thought they could get around this and keep paying their sex worker creators, were maybe interested in testing the waters to see if they could move away from the pornographic end of what they do, and realize that it failed and they weren't going to continue their business based on the cooking classes and yoga mat stuff and
yeah,
whatever.
Consider those waters tested, and I think maybe they've had second thoughts. It just goes to show that public outcry matters. That's how you make change. And a lot of people have never even heard of OnlyFans before, and now they've gotten a lot of publicity, and they are going to hold on, hopefully, to their client base. And not let this nonsense happen to them again.
Yeah, and there are so many ways that creative people have been able to make their living online by selling artwork, by selling items. But so much of that has found itself under censorship restrictions because you can't do adult level stuff. Like, if I want to sell stuff as a creative artist, if I want to sell work as a performer, the instant it becomes what people would generally define as pornographic, it's almost impossible to get paid for it in any easy to use way. And that is by design from people behind these organizations who find themselves, acceding to these policy decisions.
Alex, looks like you have something to say.
I've always got something on my mind here, and I think it's this time that we shouldn't never underestimate the power of the dollar either in affecting this kind of change at OnlyFans in the first place. And if you take this, extrapolate it to other contexts, other situations or scenarios, think about something other than a payment processor, for instance. Let's think about advertisers or advertising networks, which support a great deal of the web these days, advertising, especially journalistic endeavors and media outlets themselves that don't put all of their content behind a paywall, generally rely on ads to be popped up. And let's say that there became a coalition of advertisers, some advertising network that had a lot of purchasing power and really held sacred Christian values, Christian and family values, and then determined that something like the New York Times or Wired wasn't really syncing with those values, and that they began to pull all their ads and get all of their coalitions and all the coalition of their companies to pull all of their ads. I mean, they could effectively change content and change the voice of a lot of these outlets by the power of the dollar, which gets us full circle back to the reason why places like WBAI exists. I mean, I know we're not on the air right now, but the Pacifica Radio Network is independent from all of that and has been for, what is it, Emmanuel? I think it's over 60 years now.
Oh, more
design.
Than that, because Pacifica started in 1949. WBAI started in 1960.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So, yeah, even longer than that. But, I mean, so these networks that are by design outside of that process are, I think, becoming fewer and far between and extraordinarily valuable. And, I wish we were fundraising at the time because, I'd say now's the time to become a WBAI buddy. But, hey, you still can.
No one has ever said that before. I wish we were fundraising.
Wow. That's true. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't miss that. I feel like I'm going to eat my words. We'll probably be fundraising before you know it, right?
Yeah, speaking of eating your words, we have a phone call. Okay, let's go to the phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Hey, I wanted to add some context to the OnlyFans situation.
Sure.
I'm like a 3D creator, and I'm friends with a lot of people who make pornographic content. Specifically, it was mostly on Pornhub. And earlier this year, if you weren't a verified creator, you basically lost everything.
Wow.
And those people I know ended up going to Patreon. They ended up going to OnlyFans. And they still have only, like, recovered a fraction of what they were earning. But it wasn't because of Christian evangelicals. I mean, we can, you know, you can blame them for everything. But it's actually, like, reverberations of the Patriot Act.
Really?
Because back whenever they enacted the Patriot Act way back in the day, they deputized the banks to act as, like, you know, financial arms of the government in a way. So that's, like, why you can't, like, get weed stuff done, but they would take, like, cartel money. It's totally insane and backwards, right? But it's just really insane that, like, specifically the driving force behind all of this is MasterCard. Like, MasterCard is this insane rabbit hole. If you ever look into it, mm-hmm. like, whenever OnlyFans released, like, what was considered sexually explicit, it was MasterCard's, like, known list of things that porn sites can't have on them. But Pornhub and OnlyFans, they both got into trouble for basically the same thing. There were, like, child sex workers, people being forced into prostitution and forced onto the platform. And that was kind of like the entryway for them to start having, you know, this is happening on your platform. You're going to have to start, you know, banning sexually explicit content or we're not going to process your stuff.
Yeah.
So we're seeing like that happening and it's just, it's real messy and messed up.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up as a fallout from financial reporting laws that were instituted really as under the auspices of terror, like anti-terror law, I think, and specifically Freedom Act and Patriot Act refer to that, and child sex trafficking, of course, being a part of that kind of criteria where they want to exert this kind of control, but as you characterize it, it sort of became something that was unsupervised and then just left to the banks, right?
Yeah, it's really insane, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, they're going to come for the porn people first, and you know, a lot of people are like, "Yay, you know, porn's yucky, whatever," you know.
Who says porn is yucky? I want to hear some more.
I mean, there's actually a big movement, especially among like Generation Z, that's very like anti-porn.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting. I don't know if maybe their parents watch too much of it, and that's them being edgy. I don't know. But
rebelling against porn as part of growing up.
Yeah, it's actually there's like a whole movement called NoFap. Where people refuse to masturbate because they think it'll make them more powerful as people.
Oh, yeah, the future is bright. The future is really bright. If I wasn't feeling pessimistic before, I am now.
Yeah, I think that some of that came out of, like, porn addiction becoming something that was really talked about widely, more widely, right?
Yeah.
For that generation.
I mean, like, it's just, we're in a very shady valley, and if we can start banning porn, we can start banning speech. And it's, I know slippery slope fallacy and all that, but it really is something to think about. You know, it's not good.
Absolutely. Really absolutely. Well, thank you so much for the insight and given us a lot to think about.
Yeah, no problem. Bye.
All right. Take care. What an amazing call. Wow. I've learned so much. Pornhub being told not to have porn. It's more than half their name. And, oh boy. You have something, Rob?
No, it's fascinating, and I'm so glad we got a call from somebody who's actually closer to this and can speak from experience on it, because it's really something. And if you're out there and you have something to add on this, we would really love your phone call at 802-321-4225 or toll free at 833-755-2600. Because we need to get everyone's voices in on this and hear about what's going on from all these different perspectives. And yeah, as a creative, it sucks when there's limits placed on what you're allowed to do. There were so many other venues before OnlyFans that people who were creating sex work or adult entertainment could go to. There was Patreon for a while, and then Patreon banned the porn, and there were other things, similar things, but that one by one have fallen like dominoes because banning adult content on their platforms, and OnlyFans was meant to be the one. It was meant to be the one where you were allowed to do that sort of thing, and they kind of embraced it, but let that industry build them up into a major player, and then seemed really willing to just throw the adult producers under the bus. Yeah,
but there's a .xxx top-level domain. What do people think that's for? And you can't shut this down. This is I don't want to say it's what the net was built upon, but it's a major part of the net. And you can't just wish it away. But, if nothing else, this kind of emphasizes the importance of having these alternative ways of paying people, and cryptocurrency has never looked so good because they don't have to play by these rules.
Absolutely, because you can build it in some ways if you're having some trouble. I'm sure there's been some talk or people trying different workarounds in the interim as these policies are fluctuating. It's interesting, Pornhub was brought up. There's been a lot of investigative work around some aspects of that platform and how it's been abused, and much in the way we've talked about like social media platforms cracking down, how to control stuff that is definitely against your policy, and how to show, of course, that it is concretely being managed in some way and enforced as billed. And we're really happy to share anybody who does know a bit more about this field, how payment management systems are used, and how much power they've been given, and if the scope of some of that legislation has changed, please share with us. We've covered some of those acts and so forth over the years. So OTH@2600.com to get your emails.
Go ahead, Alex.
It bounced off your comment about .xxx. In addition to that, there is also a .sex, generic top-level domain, and a .porn, generic top-level domain. These were part of the expansion of the global domain name system.
Now, someone explain to me the difference between .porn and .xxx. I'd like to know.
The spelling.
Yeah, they're different. They're different characters, basically. Yeah, that's it. I mean, they're owned and operated by different individuals, different registry operators.
Well, we have 2600.xxx, but don't go there. You'll be disappointed.
I'm sure. Yeah, I bet you would. But yeah, but there's two other top level domains that are devoted entirely to this type of activity, and ICANN saw fit to allow additional delegations into the root zone of the domain name system for .sex and .porn. And that was back in probably 2014, I think, was when those were delegated, 2014, 2015, I would guess. It's like they've been around for a long time, and they're pretty popular.
Go ahead, Rob.
And just as someone who has been putting creative work on the net, since time immemorial, it's been such a joy of the internet to see people being able to make their own careers, to connect directly with people who appreciate, purchase, enjoy their work. So many traditional publishing industries have found themselves disrupted by people who don't need them anymore. You don't need a record deal with a major label to put your album out there. You can just put it on the internet. You don't need a TV studio or a TV network deal to put a video out there. You can just upload it yourself. And to find a segment of the population, a segment of the creative population excluded from that just because of the type of work they put out, despite the fact that it's a type of work there is demonstrable demand for, it sucks. It sucks seeing people legislated unfairly like that.
This kind of thinking doesn't just affect porn. Whenever there's a corporation that feels it's going to inject its own moral values into something, you find situations like this. this story came out recently. Well-intentioned hackers trying to teach online hygiene and safety are running into a problem on TikTok. The newer social media platform's algorithms can't distinguish between videos about criminal and ethical hacking. Marcus Hutchins, who rose to fame after temporarily stopping the WannaCry ransomware attack back in 2017, knows this problem well. Whenever he posts an educational video demonstrating hacking techniques bad actors use, TikTok's content moderation algorithm immediately removes it for seemingly violating policies against promoting criminal activity. And it also bans him from posting for a couple of days. The weird part is, each time he's appealed the removals, TikTok has reinstated the video. And Hutchins says he's not the only one. Everyone in cybersecurity is having this issue. TikTok spokesperson Jamie Favaza basically pointed to a section in the platform's guidelines that says educational content like Hutchins should be allowed. We recognize that some content that would normally be removed per our community guidelines could be in the public interest. Therefore, we may allow exceptions under certain circumstances. Well, interesting. In this particular case, they're pointing to the algorithm as the cause of the problem, but it's basically an extension of their policy saying talking about criminal hacking is something we're going to forbid, even if it's in an educational setting. And this kind of thing always backfires. It always backfires and winds up making people unable to post creative content or educational content.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a problem with any kind of algorithmic decision making at such a large scale. But you know, if they're going to have any kind of community guidelines, they certainly can't be individually policed by a massive force of content regulators at TikTok to do it. They're going to have a large portion of this done via automation. But what boggles my mind in the situation is, if the same situation is arising time and time again, and in the same result is achieved, mainly that the content is placed back up because it is found to not violate the community standards, then why is there not some kind of whitelist for creators who continually have this problem? If your content is found to have been flagged, and then after, let's say, 5 reviews or 10 reviews, and every single time it's found to not actually have violated community standards, but it's always within that gray area, then why create this problem over and over and over again? You should have a whitelist for certain creators so you can avoid this. It seems to me that they're operating on the assumption that users are going to do something bad and violate their community standards, mm-hmm. despite empirical evidence to the contrary. And that's a problem that these platforms are going to continually have until they wake up and whitelist certain creators. And let's say there's some kind of anomalous event where certain content then is flagged by numerous individuals, people who reviewed it. You know, if all of a sudden Marcus Hutchins starts posting snuff films or something like that, let's say hypothetically, he's going to get a lot of complaints. That's something that certainly would violate community standards, that would jump out, and then you can remove the whitelist. But I think if creators are their business model, they need to, I think, be a little bit more respectful for those that are on the edges of their community guidelines.
Well, the other issue with that is this list of this whitelist that you suggest, that has to be something that's open and easy to get on. Not like Twitter with their little blue check, which takes decades. It shouldn't be an elitist group that has certain rights that other people don't have because they're new or because they're unknown. These platforms, if they're going to be anything like what they purport to be, they have to be open to everybody and allow other people to become, I don't want to say influencers, but more recognized for what they do. Maybe there'd be less influencers because there'd be other people saying things and we wouldn't be devoting all our thinking power to what did this particular famous person say. It shouldn't be like that. In fact, what I like to do on Twitter is sometimes just hear what people are saying without knowing who said it. And it would be a great app to have. You know, if you could read tweets and not know who said it, and say, yeah, that's good. You know, but if Neil deGrasse Tyson says something, everybody likes it, and there's a billion retweets. But if you say the same thing, two people say something, and one of them is arguing with you. So, yeah, we need some kind of a system where it's just more open to more people.
I think some of his followers are actually stars and galaxies.
Yeah.
That's why there's so many.
And influencers.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Influencer stars.
Yeah, that's right. There's only like certain stars that we look at. You know, there's Regulus. You know, there's Sirius. But we don't look at the little dim stars. Well, I just call people dim stars. Well, we're all stars. How about that? We have a phone call.
In the Dope Show.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Overtime.
Good evening, Off the Hook. Overtime.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria. I assume you're in Bulgaria.
Yeah. There's an issue that I didn't hear you mention about the payments being denied, the processing of payments being denied to that site that was in trouble recently. Probably still is. I don't remember its name.
You mean the site we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes?
Probably, yeah.
OnlyFans?
So the issue is
OnlyFans
speech violation.
Bobson, is it OnlyFans? Is that what you're talking about? Can you hear me? Okay, I think we lost Bobson. He was beeping.
He'll call back.
But why was he beeping?
He'll call back.
Okay. But I think he's talking about the thing we were talking about.
Could be something funny with the system or a service that he was employing or a service he was being employed upon him without his knowledge. I don't know. Okay. But we're available in here. It sounded like he was wanting to speak about the argument of this being a limiting of sort of a speech, a sort of, and I think really the association is that it's a form of expression, sexual expression in this case.
Uh-huh.
But I'm curious what he thought about that. Perhaps that was what I was hearing in his characterization of.
If that's what he was talking about in the first place.
Yeah, we don't know that.
We don't know because he didn't get to finish the first paragraph of what he was saying. 802, excuse me. I can't eat on the radio. I can't eat on YouTube, I found out.
Yeah, it doesn't get flagged by the algorithm.
No, it doesn't. 802-321-4225. There is a WBAI algorithm that will flag you. This might be Bobson. Who knows? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Is this Bobson?
Good evening. No, it's not. It's Chris.
Okay, Chris. Well, you'll have to be our Bobson for now.
I've got to turn down my radio here.
Yes.
You're talking about TikTok. Doesn't that site originate in Red China, and doesn't that provide security concerns by itself? I'm a little upset at the Red Chinese for giving me the Wuhan virus at a tourist event that they shook my hands and a bunch of Chinese tourists back in October of 2019. And
if you want to make them upset, keep calling them Red Chinese. I don't like that.
Communist China.
Okay, fine. Yeah. People's Republic of China.
They were Orientals, and I said, where are you from? They said, China. I said, Taiwan. They said, the People's Republic of China, very proudly. And then they shook our hands, and 5 days later, and they stood very close and talked very close to us and put their arms around us for pictures and sat at the tables where we were later going to eat. And then 5 days later, I collapsed on the floor of my kitchen and was taken away by ambulance. But they didn't know about the Wuhan virus at that time.
And when was this?
The Wuhan virus.
No, I know, but when did this happen?
Oh, this happened in October. I was taken to the hospital October 25th of 2019. After that, I had a number of symptoms.
So you had coronavirus before virtually anybody else. Yeah, you had coronavirus before virtually anybody else, is what you're saying.
Well, not before it was filling up the hospital's parking lots in Wuhan.
Mm-hmm. And where were you? Where were you at the time this happened?
At the time, I belonged to a group called the Huntington Militia. We reenact events from 1775, uh-huh. The American Revolution. And I'm trying to get away from my speakers where you're speaking here. I've got to turn that volume down further. and I've lost my train of thought. So yeah, 2019 October is when October 20th was the last event. There were seemed to be a lot of Orientals all summer, very well dressed, and that's where they were sending. They were sending tourists to the United States, as Trump said, to spread this virus around.
Okay, and, yeah, I gotta stop there. There's so much here. No, this is wrong. Using a term that is offensive, and accusing an entire race of people of deliberately infecting us. I can overlook quoting Trump. All right, that's, you know, it upsets me, but no, this is. I tried to listen as long as I could. I really did. It's utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. Rob, go ahead.
That was a historical reenactor, and maybe he was just reenacting the Cold War.
Okay,
and,
that could be.
Call us from the 50s or something, where that sort of thing was encouraged and acceptable. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, this is Bobson, so we turn the caller ID on. Hey, Bobson, are you there? Oh, boy. I don't know what kind of connection you have now. You hear this? Bobson, smack your phone or something. You're super distorted. Oh, no. This isn't working. Is there something on our end? No? Bobson, can you hear me? And just answer loudly. It's like talking to another form of life. Kyle, say something into the phone.
Hey, Bobson.
Okay. You sound fine, Kyle, but Bobson sounds like he's in another dimension. Bobson, please call us back again and call fast so we don't get the militia calling us. 802-321-4225. Why am I giving out the phone number? I want Bobson to call, and he knows the phone number. So hopefully he calls back, and we'll be able to talk about intelligent things. Oh my God! Just too much. Too much hit me at once here. Basically, trying to communicate with aliens from outer space and aliens from right here on Earth. This seems to be a call from Washington, D.C. You want to try this? Let's see what happens. Oh, wait, that's Bobson again, though. Well, I don't know. He's either on call waiting or he's here. Good evening. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
You're the Washington, D.C. call, right?
No, not in Washington, D.C.
But your phone number is. Are you not calling from a 202 number?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It is a 202 number.
Okay. Well, we don't know where you actually are. We don't have that means of...
it's fine. You don't
what's
need
on
to
your
know.
Mind?
Yeah, we don't need to know where you are. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
But I thought I'd call you guys because I heard you talking about OnlyFans. And I had a girlfriend who recently had a problem with not OnlyFans, but what is it called? No, not for him. Chatterbait. You guys know what Chatterbait is?
That's one I haven't heard about.
Not heard it.
Okay. I think it was the original OnlyFans.
It's like Omegle.
It's like a website that you use to masturbate mutually or have sex shows, whatever it may be.
Wow.
And it was a place for these content creators to share their performances, I guess, and receive payment tokens, whatnot. But she recently had trouble because she, I guess, had broadcasted something, was under the impression that there were only 30 or 40 viewers. However, I think either a bot or a person recorded the content and then started distributing it onto other websites. So now she's finding it popping up on hundreds of different websites. And she wanted it to be live and not exist afterwards, and it still is. And so I was wondering if you guys knew of any similar situations, or if you think it's a lost cause, if you think it was a bot or an individual. But I know that that's an issue that a lot of these creators have.
Yeah, I hear this in a lot of ways in resembling revenge porn and situations where people have been filmed maybe with permission and then someone distributes it without permission, even and most importantly in vengeful ways. And so this seems like a little bit of an automated way, right? Like a way to scrape or capture live all of this data that people are monetizing, maybe exploiting vulnerability or some open network in some way, and then trying to capitalize it, maybe not even in a directly personal way, but just to kind of automate content creation and then repackage it.
But
it sounds like
what points to the automation here? Why couldn't it just be a person deciding to do this?
Because I think it's a bot who's doing it.
What tells you that?
Bots that go on, because there was something we did a lot of research into it, and I think there are almost bots start to record all of these live streams on like the Chatterbait or the OnlyFans, but I'm not sure.
Okay, all right, Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of this sort of thing that happens, and it's a matter of like what we would call forms of DRM. And the long and the short of it is that on a technological level, if somebody is watching something on their computer screen, they could just as easily record that screen, no matter what it is. It's like, people watch a movie on Netflix, and it's very commonplace for those movies on Netflix to be recorded on the viewer's end and then re-uploaded to like a BitTorrent site or things like that. Digital content is not lockable in any meaningful way. It's just difficult. It can be difficult to get past the security measures there, but it's never impossible. And while I'm not familiar with this particular sort of case happening on like a site like Chatterbait, I think it's very common for any sort of streaming site to find themselves being recorded either by the people watching or, you know, by an account that is just using that to gather content, which it can then upload elsewhere. And in the field of like adult content, I think there is a huge sort of scene out there of people like recording something from here so they could re-upload it everywhere else. And so, you know, if you fell victim to that, there are like entire businesses now that a lot of sex workers are using, which, you know, exist to basically trawl the sites and look for your client's material and then send the DMCA notices and everything else. And much like Hollywood sends takedown notices for people sharing movies or TV shows, whatever they don't have permission to. It's very commonplace that this sort of thing would happen. And it sucks if it's something that you're putting out there just as a stream and you're hoping it doesn't get out there as a recorded thing.
Carla, did you have something to say to that?
I said the problem with those DCMA or whatever reports is that sometimes if you do that and you use your real information, they'll blackmail you and ask for lots of money, and it's a whole headache.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happens as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ability for people to capture, I think, Rob's point about it could be a paying customer, someone that's paying for it, but they want it even for their private viewing at a later time, even though it's something that happens as sort of a real-time service in this mutual video virtual session or instance. If they capture it, it's about the content creator maintaining control once it's sort of out of their control. And that's sort of a problem with the platform itself, billing it as kind of like Snapchat, where we'll control this, maintain this, and it'll go away, or you can... it will follow this one path, but as we know with data streams and digital files, they can be copied very easily, and so there may be like precautions and things that people can take with the people that they're engaging this with. If something pops up somewhere and they know it was a certain user they interacted with, they can maybe, and it happens again or something, you see a pattern. And like Rob was suggesting, a way to take stuff down, maybe something that people consider or organize themselves.
I think your best move at this point, you might not be able to keep the material from being posted, but it sounds like you have the ability to figure out how it's being done. And if you can expose that, or if you can expose who is doing it, who is behind it, that's a powerful weapon, and that might help a lot of other people and maybe help design a system where it's not so easy.
Really? Okay.
Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, and I think, you know, to Rob's point with the DMCA notices and things, this is a very tough situation, because if it goes from the, excuse me, the, what was it called, the Chatterbox site?
Chatterbait.
Chatterbait.
Chatterbait, sorry, yes, Chatterbait. site. If it goes, all right.
I just got the name.
I get the pun. I get the pun. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. It's like a pun grenade there.
It's clever.
But you know, if it goes from Chatterbait to various other websites, I would venture to guess many of them are going to be outside the United States. They might not respond to DMCA notices. They might not respond to lawyers. They might not respond to legal process. And she's probably right that this can result in greater extortion fees, especially if there's any PII or facial recognition, let's say biometric databases, again coming up today. But if you can identify that particular person, then, you know, it's problematic, obviously, and becomes a very ineffective method of whack-a-mole. And I also think you're right, too, Rob. Maybe the issue should be approached as one of – as like a copyright enforcement or like a brand protection system, a copyright protection system. And, you know, if only there were a way whereby – let's say one file or image could be matched against an image remotely somewhere, you know, maybe like a hash matching technology, perhaps.
All right, I see what you're doing there, Alex.
That somebody could employ.
You're defending that whole Apple thing all over again. Well, we'll get into that if you want to get into that again.
I'm just thinking of another use case scenario here for victims of things like revenge porn.
I don't think that would help in this case at all. I don't think that.
I think it would. It quite possibly would help. And if it didn't help, I think it would undermine your own arguments from the last time. Anyhow, because if it – well, look, if it was an exact match of a file elsewhere, I think the hash matching technology here obviously would work. But if you're recreating a file, if you're recording a recording and you're not taking the actual file, that's going to be a different digital signature. It's going to have a different hash. So in all likelihood, hash matching probably wouldn't work. But I think that's I imagine there's got to be something akin to this, to what those brand protection systems do that troll various media outlets and things. But they might not have coverage on these weird new sites that pop up to disperse this sexually explicit content. And even if you go after one, they're probable – they're very likely to be throwaway organizations, something that can just pop up somewhere else in another jurisdiction, perhaps, with another corporate entity. So it's a very tough position to be in.
I wonder if technology can be developed that would use facial recognition and then basically hunt for that face showing up and shut it down on whatever public sites might be displaying that particular face. But the only person that could do that, that could say, revoke all instances of this face showing up, is somebody that has that face. It's just a thought. I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I think that's what a lot of these brand protection systems will do, that go out and look for counterfeit marketplaces and things like that, usually as of products, right? And those will, to a certain extent, I think, match hashes of the individual files, but there's also a visual similarity component to the way they work, too.
Go ahead, Rob, and then we'll let the caller go.
Yeah, but like as we've spoken about on this program, the facial recognition algorithms out there and in common use are still not very good. They're mostly work on, I think, white men, and that's about it. But beyond that, like, and this is a sad part of the reality for people trying to make a living with online content. Once you put something on the internet, you are never going to retain control of that file. Theoretically, anybody else could copy it, could make derivative files of it and whatever, and it could circulate around out there outside of your control. And that's something that I think needs to be better said and educated out there among people who are thinking of going into this type of work, because it is a real danger.
I hope we were somewhat helpful. Any other questions or thoughts?
No, you guys were wonderful. I don't think there's really any hope for her to get that content off the internet, but she is desperate. So if you have any listeners or hackers for hire, please write in to Off the Hook, and maybe you guys can find my number and let me know, or I'll call in and check in, because she really would do anything to get it off the internet.
Well, be sure to let her know that we support her. She has lots of support out there, and that basically many people are going through similar things. She's not alone.
Yeah, it's very tragic. Well, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Fun.
Take care.
All right.
Bobson from Bulgaria has been trying throughout that whole call to reach us. I've been watching the screen. Have you connected, Kyle?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, let me know when you connect.
All right. I'll let you know.
Okay. There's nobody on the phone now.
It is currently not active. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I just saw it ringing, but I guess it went to voicemail. So, Bobson, the phone line is open out there in Bulgaria if you want to give us another try. I won't give out the phone number so nobody else will hear it for the first time. And hopefully we'll be hearing from... Did he have something to say that we were waiting for? He wanted to talk about some site that we thought we had already talked about. Well, this is him. This is him now, so go ahead. Bobson, is this you?
This is me, Emmanuel. Can you hear me?
Yes, if this is Bobson, I can hear you. If it's not Bobson, then I can't.
Yes, it's me.
Okay, good.
Sounds
okay.
Great.
Don't lose this connection. This is the best connection you've had all night.
Well... So what I was trying to bring up earlier about the OnlyFans issue.
Yes, we were talking about it.
Where their payment processing was denied them for unclear reasons and all that. I think it may be a freedom of speech issue in this case. And the reason I think that is because there was a movie a quarter of a century ago, which was produced by Oliver Stone and another person, I don't remember their name, but it was directed by Milos Forman, and it did dealt with a case that was in front of the Supreme Court in 1988. Yeah, I'm talking about the movie The People versus Larry Flint,
yes.
And in that movie, one of the things that became clear to me, as much as I may have felt uncomfortable about his magazine, is that it was a freedom of speech issue that they were trying to defend. And I'm not familiar with the paperwork to the case or what have you, but I think maybe Alex, who's far more competent than me in legal matters, may look into how this thing may relate to that thing from the 1988 case of the Supreme Court, which was Flint versus Falwell. And they are both passed by now. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to bring to the discussion.
Well, Alex, you've been called upon. Any comments?
I'd say I think it's a long and sort of, you know, drawn out history of First Amendment jurisprudence, you know, from the 1980s onward. But I think it raises interesting issues, and I'll tell you that, you know, these First Amendment issues and matters arise in a lot of places where you wouldn't ordinarily expect them to arise as well. And a lot of things are forms of expression that wouldn't otherwise be thought of as protected by the First Amendment. So it's something I'll take a look into, and I would say, you know, give me some time. Let me have a think about that one. I don't know how to answer it off the top of my head. But I will say, though, when it comes to the First Amendment, there's one thing that is definitely and has been found to recently fall outside the First Amendment, and that is child pornography, by the way. In case you were wondering, it's far less protected by the First Amendment. So if, for instance, there was a system devised on an individual device that would permit you to, let's say, match hashes of local files with other known files of, you know, sexually explicit material involving children.
Oh, you are asking for it, Alex. You are really asking for it.
That was the Apple communicator issue, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yes, that's exactly right, yeah. I'm just going to bring every single question back to that in some way.
Wow, okay.
Well, I wasn't expecting that from you, Alex, but if you feel like it, it's...
Why not, right? Change it up a little.
This is why judges love him so much.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, just don't lie, Alex. I mean, it's not recently that child pornography has been considered illegal. It's not like that recently changed like it was just a couple months ago. There was this big free for all of kid butt.
Right. Yeah. Well, look. Yeah. It wasn't a few months ago. I mean, it's been around. It's a precedent. Obviously, it's been around for a long time. And pornography, you know, its constitutionality has been, you know, subject to a certain amount of scrutiny and certainly a lot of case law over the last several decades too. I mean, there was these famous cases where the Supreme Court had to decide whether or not something was pornographic. So they used to watch pornography in the you know, the basement, I think, of the court.
Wow.
Is a very, very strange thing. You know, I don't think that's an old wives' tale, but I'm pretty sure that court was actually doing it.
Well,
but there is
I'm not sure that was the issue in some of those cases. I mean, I've only seen the movie, as I said, from a quarter century ago, maybe not for decades now, but the Flint versus Falwell issue, no one was saying it wasn't pornography, and it was about how it was a freedom of speech issue, from what I remember of the legal side of it, which may not have been very accurately portrayed to the major Hollywood blockbuster as it turned out to be. But
yeah, well, that's it. I mean, and I think that gets right to the heart of the issue here. And one of the famous quotes from the Supreme Court justice is that, you know, the pornography is incredible. You know, it's very difficult to define, but you know it when you see it. And that's literally how they dealt with the
issues. I remember that one from the movie as well.
No, was it? You know, I don't think I ever saw that. I think that was People versus Larry Flint, right? Is that what the name of the movie was?
Yeah, directed by Milos Forman, starring Woody Harrelson and some other.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting one. So let me think on the other issues that you brought up, though, Bubs. And yeah.
Okay, well, he's puffing on his pipe now, so while he's doing that, I think we're going to move on to some other topics. Anything else, Bobson, from you?
Well, no, I just thought I'd bring up that freedom of speech thing, and I wish you a great evening. Thank you for the radio show and the follow-up.
Well, thank you for being there and for calling.
Sorry it took so many.
Well, it was worth it. It was worth all the efforts, and I'm glad you got through.
Mm-hmm. You have a wonderful evening.
All right, you too. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Have a wonderful 3 in the morning or whatever time it is over there. Bobson from Bulgaria. Okay, so Alex, you seem to want to talk about this whole Apple thing. You know, I'd like to just read a couple of remarks from someone who was involved in this. Basically, Jonathan Meyer, an assistant professor of computer science and public affairs at Princeton University. This is what he wrote in the Washington Post. We wrote the only peer-reviewed publication on how to build a system like Apple's, and we concluded the technology was dangerous. We're not concerned because we misunderstand how Apple's system works. The problem is, we understand exactly how it works. Our research project began 2 years ago as an experimental system to identify CSAM, child sexual abuse material, in end-to-end encrypted online services. As security researchers, we know the value of end-to-end encryption, which protects data from third-party access, but we're also horrified that CSAM is proliferating on encrypted platforms, and we worry online services are reluctant to use encryption without additional tools to combat CSAM. We sought to explore a possible middle ground where online services could identify harmful content while otherwise preserving end-to-end encryption. The concept was straightforward. If someone shared material that matched a database of known harmful content, the service would be alerted. If a person shared innocent content, the service would learn nothing. People couldn't read the database or learn where the content matched, since that information could reveal law enforcement methods and help criminals evade detection. Knowledgeable observers argued a system like ours was far from feasible. After many false starts, we built a working prototype, but we encountered a glaring problem. Our system could be easily repurposed for surveillance and censorship. The design wasn't restricted to a specific category of content. A service could simply swap in any content matching database, and the person using that service would be none the wiser. You know, these are words coming from someone who has designed a system like Apple's that people are up in arms about. And I think, you know, that carries a lot of weight. That is something that we need to take seriously. When people who are behind this type of thing are saying, whoa, this is dangerous and it can be misused, we have to ask ourselves, is that kind of thing worth it?
Look, I respect the author of that article. I think he's well bona fide. But the fact of the matter is here, I read that article. I don't think it advanced the debate about this at all, because it just parroted over and over and over again the same arguments that are all premised on an identically erroneous assumption that what you're reviewing here is content. What every single one of these articles and all of these privacy advocates never mention in any of their articles is a definition of what a hash is. And I would go out of on a limb and say they may not know how to define a hash. If you ask a lot of these privacy advocates without any preparation time to explain to them what is a cryptographic hash and how does it work on a file, I bet you most of them are not going to know how to answer that question accurately. Because if they did, they wouldn't be making the same mistake over and over and over again about this particular system. The problem that everyone assumes, the assumption that is the error amongst everybody is that this can be used to track some kind of concepts. It cannot. It can only be used to track files. Individual files have a fingerprint, essentially, called a hash. It's just a long string of numbers and letters. Something like an MD5 sum is Alex, very unique.
We don't need to get into all that, but if you truly believe that the person who designed a system like this doesn't understand how a hash works, you're free to believe that. I think he does. I think he knows what he's talking about. But let me just ask you this. Okay, let's say that I have a meme. Okay, a meme of a president of a country that's not very flattering. And I pass that meme around to my friends, okay? It's a file. It's something we all share. And then the government says to Apple, whatever government it might be, you need to tell us if this hash exists on these phones. How is this any different? The hash is going to be the same because the file has been shared with all these people.
Sure.
It's the same damn thing. File. How is this not a threat?
But Emmanuel. But any change to that file, anybody who crops it, anybody who changes the
color,
Why
would anybody change it? What's the point of changing it? We're passing it around. It's like a baseball card.
To make it bigger, to make it larger, to evade some kind of hash matching technology. That's how. I mean, it would be very, very easy.
Okay, so your advice to avoid the gulag is if you get something that could be used against you, make sure you modify it a little bit so that the authorities will be fooled. That's our form of protection from now on.
That would be an effective way to defeat the system, this mastermind system, you know, that's going to be out there tracking dissidents. Look, everybody's making this slippery slope argument about this technology and that it's going to be eventually misused. It's going to be used to track concepts. It cannot be used to track concepts. Sure, an individual file, but you got to remember, the manufacturers of these devices have complete control over the operating system. If they are going to be forced to put in some kind of backdoor to monitor concepts, that can happen anyway. It has nothing to do with the technology.
When it happens, we will be there to reveal it. But this is something that can be used in a very dangerous way. And, the ACLU sees this, EFF sees this, and people who design such systems see this.
And I think they're wrong. And I think they're wrong because of the very fact, and again, this is something that has been ignored in large part by the media, that this type of technology has been in place for many years already. It's been used by Google. It's been used by Facebook. I even mentioned last week a criminal prosecution that arose, I think an erroneous criminal prosecution. That's what I'm more afraid of with these types of situations because I've seen it happen. But criminal prosecutions that arose from detection of CSAM in Google Photos. And So we have about 10 years, probably
okay,
more.
Okay, but what you're not saying here is that that's a completely different system where you're uploading photos to a service.
No.
This is on your phone. The Apple is going into your phone and checking the hashes of files on your phone and reporting the ones that are objectionable. That is very different.
They're only looking at files when they're about to be uploaded to the cloud. To their cloud. So these files that are imminently going to reside on Apple's own servers are being reviewed over there. Can I just ask you one question?
They're looking at files that are about to be uploaded to their cloud service. What keeps them from looking at them even if they're not going to be uploaded? Is there some kind of technology in place that prevents them from doing that?
Or just their
good word that they won't?
But that has nothing to do with matching hashes. They have the ability to do that no matter what. They can put anything they want on these phones. Matching a hash on one side, whether it's on the device or whether it's in the cloud, I really think is a distinction without a difference, because what we're talking about is the ability of the technology to do something bad, and which is the slippery slope argument. But my major premise here is that because we have over 10 years of data of this happening already, and we don't have some totalitarian regime misusing hash matching to track down dissidents, we know that it's not a slippery slope. It's a sticky slope. It hasn't moved at all because it's an idiotic way to try to track dissidents and people.
I maintain that if you have a meme that says Lukashenko sucks on your iPhone and you're in Belarus, and Apple has revealed how they're able to match hashes, I think there'll be a very strong interest in finding out who's got that on their phones, and then they'll be visited. And if you can tell me that's not possible in light of what Apple says they are doing now, then I will say I'm wrong, but it seems to me you're saying that that is indeed possible, and that the best defense is to crop the picture and change it some way so that you'll fool the authorities.
I'm saying it's possible regardless of whether or not there's this hash-matching technology on your phone. Because Apple basically owns these devices, they create the operating system. They can create any functionality they want into this. I would be much more concerned about the technology that is about to be implemented that detects nudity in text messages sent to children. That's some kind of algorithm that is looking at the content of the actual images. That's technology that could be used to find a photograph of Lukashenko much more effectively than matching the hash of the file.
And
because there's no content of
the fact that they were both announced at the same time tells me that that's exactly what the thinking is here.
I just think it was a very bad PR move for them. They didn't expect this backlash because people conflated the two technologies at issue at first. If they just announced the fact that they were going to be hash matching, that wouldn't have caused any fanfare. It would have actually probably been bad for them because Apple has not done this for so long. And you got to remember, this is a company that really resisted the FBI and the United States government when they wanted them to build in a backdoor. It's a company that has built its brand reputation on being privacy conscious. So I think that they have probably gained a little bit of credibility in that they're not trying to build in some nefarious backdoor to enable autocratic regimes to track down dissidents here. I mean, we're talking about something that is non-content whatsoever. A hash is just a long string of numbers that exists in one way or another without respect to what that picture is of or what the file is. I mean,
it's listed in a database, and it's very much about what is contained in that file or that picture. Kyle, you have something to say?
I just want to extend this. I think the two things being released, I agree, they're both PR moves. I'll agree with that, and I think they were both concerning at the time. I don't think there was anything about that one or the other. This got a little bit more attention because of the confusion, I think, and about where some of this activity was being taken place, and things like the Fourth Amendment and, you know, having some control over how your data is judged or when it is judged. Specifically, let's extend out. So this is being used. What about hash planting? Or if this is what we are using as the rubric to confirm that something has taken place, e.g. evidence, right? This is the rule of thumb we're going to use. What's stopping an authority just saying, yeah, we found several hash matches, and that's it? I saw Mike Lindell with a whole lot of cascading text and characters.
Oh, the Matrix, yeah.
And that looked like a lot of hash and, you know, hex. And so if he says that's what it is, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So we decide that this is how we know evidence exists. What is stopping it from, you know, people planting evidence is a thing. What if it is simple, if it's so simple to get access to a device, if it was used by an authoritarian regime, which we know Apple operates in many of these countries and parts of the world, and arguably our own could be in that category in some ways. So, like, extending it out, what do you foresee? I mean, how do you plan in a world where this is just totally cool with everybody?
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, and look, unlike the rest of you guys, I actually agree in part with Kyle. So, you know, he's got that going for him, I think. But I think you're exactly right, though, about it's the principles that underlie the consequences of this technology that I think are frankly more problematic to me than the technology itself, because there's other erroneous assumptions that are built into the hash matching idea itself, and that's namely that whatever is on your phone, the owner of the phone is responsible for that content. It's just assuming that these are all single-user devices, that they might not be out somewhere where, you know, 50, 60 people have access to them, you know, like in a public library or, let's say, a poorer community. How are you then going to figure out who downloaded that material? Who's going to be charged criminally? What kind of privacy violations is this going to arise to? Because whenever these hashes are matched and they meet a certain threshold, I think it was 30 of them, it was a fairly generous number, it will then go to NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, who then reports it to local law enforcement, possibly FBI as well, and that becomes probable cause sufficient to obtain a search warrant. Then the next thing you know, the police are in your house.
I was just thinking of like AirDrop too, like where you have unsolicited stuff that could match a hash,
absolutely,
where you're basically your hash bombed on a train or something with stuff that
hash
will then
bombed. Wow,
I'm just making up stuff.
That's where we're going with this. You're writing the future, is what you're doing.
I'm truly trying to take work through this with us. You know, the conversation,
Alex. We could talk about this all night, and it is fun. I think you should have a debate at Hope. I think it would be a good conversation. Make people think about this. Get some civil libertarians on one side, a bunch of them, and then you on the other side, and it'll be
me on the other side. Yeah,
we'll make sure people don't throw things.
I'm a huge privacy advocate. I think people know that about me,
yes,
but I think this is the wrong battle to fight here when it's non-content. And look, you know, an important principle to remember is, you know, you can only die on a hill once. I just don't think this is the hill that these privacy advocates should die on.
I don't know. They seem to die on a lot of hills, but I hear you. And yes, you are a privacy advocate, but I happen to disagree with you here, but I respect your views and I look forward to continuing the dialogue.
We have no more calls.
We have no more calls. We have no more time. We're out of time. We're out of calls. But please write to us, oth@2600.com. Tune in next week. We'll be back both Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime. Please support WBAI however possible. 516, no, wait, that number doesn't work anymore. 212-209-2950, or give to WBAI.org. And if you like what we did today, please support the station and tell them we're your favorite show, unless you can find a better one. It's possible. Until next week, it's Emmanuel for Kyle and Rob and Alex and Gila. Good night.